comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. That's a guarantee, and it is the show where you matter. Tonight is K-Files night. Now, what that means, it's pretty simple. K-Files is our free weekly newsletter, and everyone who has subscribed knows that on Friday night, right after the show, we start sending out that newsletter. So we'll start emailing right after the show. Some of you will get it tonight. Some of you will get it in the morning. It takes a while to send it out. So if you haven't subscribed, the big question, of course, is where's the genius in that? It's free, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and look for the link that says K-Files. Pretty easy. It's the largest link on the page. And click it, and in a few seconds, you can be subscribed to the K-Files. Tonight, following the show, we have something special for you in the members area. So if you happen to be watching on our television channel right now, after the show is completed tonight, if you just keep watching, we got something special for you. I think pretty special, and I think you'll enjoy it. Speaking of tonight and enjoying tonight, you know, back in December, there was an event that took place over in Norway, in the sky above Norway, and it has come to be referred to as the Blue Spiral or the Norway Spiral, and there was a lot of speculation about what could that be. And, you know, I said, I don't think that's a missile. And at first, of course, everyone denied having fired a missile, and then the Russians said they did. But, you know, it just didn't look or act like a missile. And so I didn't think it was a missile. Well, there is someone who has a little different perspective on that, who has also agreed it didn't look or act like a missile, but has sort of figured out why. And he says it was indeed a missile, but there was something else going on as well that caused that to happen. My guest tonight is Richard Hoagland, and he'll join us when we come back from break. We're going to be talking about this spiral over Norway, what really went on, what caused the phenomena that everyone saw, and furthermore, what lasting effects has it had, if any, upon the U.S. space exploration program? Has it had any effect? Has it had any ramifications? And if so, what are they and why are they? He's always an interesting guest, and he'll join us right after this.
Thank you.
right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, as I said, is Richard Hoagland. He's always, absolutely always, an interesting guest and has contributed a great amount of work in pushing forward, I think, the scientific side, the scientific look at the phenomena that we talk about here on this show all the time, whether we're talking about UFOs or if we're talking about Mars or we're talking about, as tonight, the spiral over Norway. Richard Hoagland, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It's good to have you back.
Good evening, Kevin. It's nice to be back.
Now, you just returned from a conference.
Yeah, we were, Robin and I were at the LA Expo, the Conscious Life Expo, which is held annually sometime around Valentine's Day in Los Angeles at the LA Hilton, and we met a lot of our old friends, and I gave a keynote and a major after conference presentation, and a lot of interesting developments are indeed taking place, so I presume in the next couple of hours we'll have time to go through a few.
Yes, and we don't have to stay focused on this spiral over Norway, but I have to tell you, after reading what you wrote, which, by the way, folks, if you just click his picture on my site, it will take you to his site. His site is enterprisemission.com. Now I read the three parts of the article, and I'm assuming, and I hope I'm correct, that there's not a fourth part yet.
No, thank goodness there's not a fourth
okay.
part.
Okay, so I read the three-part article, or the three articles,
right.
And this is fascinating. You know, I said when this happened, I just looking at the thing and looking at video of it and pictures of it, I said, that cannot be, a missile can't do that. And
not in normal conditions.
Yeah, and then when I read your article, it's the lights went on. I said, well, yeah, it can be made to do that.
Yes.
So, sort of take us through that a little bit. What is the weird story about this light, this spiral over Norway?
Well, it began rather normally on the morning in the pre-dawn darkness in northern Norway, where the sun at that time of year on December 9th does not rise. It kind of skims along below the southern horizon and, you know, retreats and things get dark again. So, as everybody was going to work around 7:30, 7:45 local time in Norway, which is that little slip of land on the eastern side of the peninsula that holds Norway, Sweden, and Finland, and a little bit of Russia, people were looking to the south-southeast, and they saw what they described as a blue light coming from the southeast toward them, which suddenly blossomed into this extraordinary spiral that, as near as I can now calculate, was probably something like 20 times bigger than the full moon at its maximum spread. I've been going out nights here, you know, in the last couple of months when we, you know, do outside chores at night here in the deserts of New Mexico, and a couple of nights we've had fronts coming in that bring cirrus ice clouds over New Mexico, and you look up through the cirrus ice before an approaching storm, and you can see the moon, and you'll see a ring around the moon, which is about the same size as the Norway spiral seen that pre-dawn, and it must have been absolutely astonishing, as the eyewitness reports have tended to corroborate, because people were just, you know, drop jaw. They just, you know, some were driving, some were walking, some were in buses or public transportation. There are a few videos from cell phones. There were a couple of videos that were posted on the net from more sophisticated actual video cameras. But not a lot of people were able to see it, and even fewer were able to record it before it disappeared. It only lasted, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then it dissipated, leaving this kind of spiraling, intensely turquoise blue corkscrew in the sky that then also slowly dissipated over the next half hour or so until it was a normal, you know, pre-Norwegian dawn in the middle of winter. And initially, people were obviously very perplexed and confused and wondering what it was, so they started calling various authorities like the Weather Service and local radio and TV stations. And the TV stations, in turn, you know, called the Norwegian military and space experts. And pretty soon, everybody kind of thought, well, maybe it's one of those Russian missile tests that they conduct to the east of Norway over in the White Sea region, which runs up, you know, between where Russia and Russia meet in that isthmus between the White Sea and the Barents Sea. And the Russians initially denied that they had any kind of a missile launch scheduled for that morning. And it was only something like 24 hours later that they admitted very, very grudgingly, which was a clue to me that there was something unusual going on, we had a submarine in the White Sea, we were launching a missile, you know, the new Bulova missile system that Putin is testing. But they denied, in fact, I believe they still deny categorically, that their missile caused this extraordinary Archimedean pinwheel spiral that then assumed a lot of other geometries before it faded away. And I think I now understand, as you know from reading all three parts of our analysis, why the Russians are sticking, you know, like by the book, that they did not create the spiral, because technically, if our analysis is correct, they didn't. Their missile was used by someone or something else to create a spectacular, amazing light show, which has all kinds of implications, as I lay out in the three parts of our analysis.
One of the things that I noticed in this whole thing was, I mean, right off the bat, when they first started speculating maybe it was a missile, and the Russians were at that point saying, not us.
Nope, they were.
But one of the things that I noticed immediately is that, well, there had already been six or seven failed missile tests in that area. People know what a missile looks like, and this didn't look like a missile to them.
Not at all. And there were several other reasons for thinking that it wasn't a normal missile failure. For one thing, when you're testing missiles, as I know from all the years I spent at Cape Canaveral with the Air Force and with NASA, those things are loaded with explosives, with radio triggers. So if something goes wrong, the missile, you know, a range safety officer can send a radio signal to blow the damn thing up so that it doesn't rain pieces down on the head of innocent bystanders.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that occurred during this missile launch. Instead, something seems to have literally reached out and grabbed this missile in mid-flight. And as you can see from the analysis of the numbers that we do in Part 3, at that point in its flight, that missile should have been traveling something between 9,000 and 12,000 miles per hour. That's almost satellite speeds. But if you look at our analysis, particularly with the graphs and the recreation of the ground track and all that, which are again in the piece on enterprisemission.com, you can see that this thing was floating across the sky slower than maybe a Piper Cub, something like 200 miles an hour. So if it was the missile, something, you know, stopped it in mid-flight. Kevin, this is impossible.
You would think so.
Yet it did happen, and it happened on videotape. So as you'll see when you read the analysis, our conclusion is that somebody was demonstrating some extraordinarily sophisticated technology that morning. They used this Russian missile as a kind of target of opportunity, and it was a message from someone to a lot of other someones down here on Earth, and we can have some fun discussing some of the implications of who might have been sending such an extraordinary message in northern Norway that pre-dawn.
Well, I want us to get into that precisely. Because, I mean, this is just phenomenal. As you described it, something, someone, somehow, reached out and grabbed a missile moving at around 9 to 12,000 miles per hour, drags it almost to a stop, and sets it spinning. Let's talk about who might have been sending a message.
Well, the first thing, as you'll notice, I've titled my series A Potential Nobel Torsion Message Over Norway. And the reason for that title is this all occurred just hours before the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama, was to show up in southern Norway at a place called Oslo, which is the capital, to accept his Nobel Peace Prize. So it looked to me, and everything that I have discovered since seems to confirm that initial impression, that among others, whoever was doing this was intending to send a very strong message to the President of the United States.
Okay, let's talk about what message.
Well, look, this is a technology which is not supposed to exist. This is a technology which is not supposed to be even possible. This is a technology that we're certainly not supposed to have any kind of control over by any power on this planet. So right away, if you've got some technology capable of reaching out and stopping an object in mid-flight and slowing it down from 9 to 12,000 miles an hour to almost a dead stop, that means you have the upper hand militarily, that nothing that we have in any of our arsenals anywhere on this planet, Russian, Chinese, Iranian, Korean, you name it, can touch whoever was controlling this technology. And it was blatantly a public demonstration. So it was also on the eve of the president of the most powerful nation on the planet, us, the United States, going to this place, Norway, to accept a peace prize. So to me, the bottom line message was kind of clear. Whoever was wielding this technology was basically saying to the military powers of the entire world, of the entire planet, see what we can do? Would you like us to do this to you for real? So it was obviously a bargaining chip, a huge bargaining chip in some unknown conversation that may be occurring even as we're having this program tonight, Kevin, between the powers that be on this planet and perhaps someone who is not on this planet.
So do you think that there is actual contact and perhaps negotiation taking place?
I don't know. All I know is what I can read in these numbers and this phenomenology. In the analysis, I put a lot of time and effort, and as I show in the piece, I actually called in, you know, other members of the Enterprise family, research associates, people located in Norway, people located here in the United States, all contributed to this analysis. Our Norway correspondent actually, in the middle of our analysis, had his apartment broken into and his computer killed. It was a Mac. And a lot of material rearranged in his apartment by somebody to basically send a message that they did not like the idea that he was helping us in this analysis. So obviously there are folks on Earth who are very disturbed that we were looking at this from outside and trying to figure out what was going on. That, by the way, is not the only bizarre thing that's occurred with computers in the last couple of months around this phenomenon.
But, and I'll tell you, I had bizarre stuff happen to my computers even last night. This is not an unusual thing. It happens to us not infrequently either. Really weird stuff. I can sometimes sit here, Richard, and see, I can watch on my monitor and see that someone has taken control of the computer.
Hmm. Well, we've had some pretty serious problems beginning a few months ago, even before I got into this analysis. And maybe later on in the program, I'll go through some of it, and maybe some of your listeners might have an idea of who's behind it or what we can do to prevent it or something.
All right, so we have, let me ask you this. Do you, in your heart of hearts, do you think that whoever did this is an off-worlder?
Well, given the capabilities of this technology in physics, which I've been talking about for years, which is the hyperdimensional torsion physics model that we have written about and talked about and done DVDs on and, you know, presented at countless conferences, I would say that whoever has access to this technology also has access to real spaceflight. So technically, I would be astonished if they were not in some fashion based off-world. I don't think it's our guys playing games with our guys, because there's almost no reason to.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this planet for this kind of technology is too small to start doing things like this late in the game.
Just either yesterday or today, time sort of runs together on me sometimes, but it was either yesterday or today. The U.S. military successfully test-fired a anti-missile laser system mounted on a 747 in flight.
Mm-hmm.
And killed a missile.
Development for years.
Yeah. There have been several of them in development for years, but this one...
This is a 747 specifically loaded with a chemical laser.
Mm-hmm.
That was based out of, one of my sources reported to me they last saw it, based at Boeing in Seattle, just north of Seattle. And it was going to be scheduled for some test flights this spring, so I'm not surprised that this occurred while we were away.
Well, I wanted to compare these two events. On the one hand, it is impressive that there's a 747 flying around with a laser on it that can shoot missiles out of the air. That's impressive, and I'm glad it's been developed. But that's like a match, as comparing a match to a laser when you compare to what was done over Norway. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. With me this evening, Richard Hoagland, and at the moment we're talking about this spiral over Norway, this incredible event that took place back in December. And Richard, I was saying when we went away for break that you know, being able to shoot a missile with a laser and knock it out of the air, that's impressive. But compared to this thing over Norway, that's like a match compared to a laser.
There is zero comparison. I was going to ask you before the break, have you ever heard of a Star Trek term called a tractor beam?
Yes.
Okay. For those who may not have in our audience, a tractor beam is a force technology that can literally reach out into space and interact with objects at a distance, either push them or pull them. If it pushes them, it's called a pressor beam, like pressing something away.
Mm-hmm.
And if it pulls them, it's called a tractor beam, like it's like a tractor drawing something toward you. Well, it's been a standard staple of science fiction authors for decades. Probably, I don't remember the earliest example. Maybe it was E.E. Smith who used it in his Lensman series, but what we appear to have seen over Norway on the 9th of December was a blatant demonstration of some kind of tractor beam or pressor beam technology, which I believe, as I lay out in the analysis, is grounded in this field of torsion physics, which we know is real science, we know can do this kind of stuff, has been carefully experimented with by the former Soviet Union, by the black ops community on this side of the former Iron Curtain, but nowhere has it been made as public and as blatantly displayed as it was on that morning of December 9th.
Now, in Norway is a HAARP-type facility.
Among other places around the world.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, there were some in existence before we had ours, I understand.
There was one at Sora in the old Soviet Union, which still exists. There is a network, as I said, in Norway and in other parts of the Scandinavian peninsula, both in Sweden as well as in Finland. There is the U.S. facility that everybody's been talking about near Anchorage, Alaska. And there's also some in the Southern Hemisphere. There's some now, I understand, in Australia, which have recently come online, and they're not really talking too much about them. But these are facilities dotted around the world, yes.
Can that facility, can that technology accomplish what we saw over Norway?
Not in terms of the patents as published in the open literature. It would have to be modified. There would have to be other things added to it. But you would start out with the basic HAARP technology, and then you would add bells and whistles to the point where you could control the electrified plasma in the ionosphere. And it's the plasma creating torsion wave effects that would actually do the inertia or mass nullification and would bring something like this missile to a standstill from, you know, around 12,000 miles an hour flight.
All right. Now, in your article, you have a picture in part three. You have a picture of a log sheet of the Norway HAARP system being active during that period of time when the spiral appeared. What's the significance of that?
Well, we don't have people actually admitting that they were responsible. In fact, they're going in exactly the opposite direction. They claim categorically that the ICECAT facility, which is the HAARP facility in Norway, just outside Tromsø, which is the largest metropolitan center in northern Norway over there on the upper west coast, they claim categorically they were not responsible. But when you look at the online logs, which we were able to gain access to through a mutual friend of ours, David Wilcox, who had a source who was able to find those within the first few hours after this phenomena appeared, it shows that the facility was up and running, that the antennas were energized, that they were heating the ionosphere, which is what the HAARP technology is supposed to do. And in fact, there is even a project that was supposed to run that morning called, romantically, Tequila Sunrise. And I just leave it to your imagination to, you know, kind of project in your mind the effect of too many tequilas and how you would greet the dawn.
Okay, so if it's not capable of producing the effect that we saw, that the world saw in the sky over Norway, and yet it's running at that time, there are a couple of possibilities come to mind. One, and I think I'm going to use this one first, but I think it's the less likely. Someone here on Earth was aware that some off-world power was about to do this, and they were trying to use the HAARP technology to prevent it. I think that's not likely.
Or let me modify that, Kevin. Maybe mm-hmm. they were using it to try to pick up information.
Oh, now that's another possibility.
In other words, as a terrestrially based sensor system, because that's what HAARP really is good at. And in fact, that's what it's supposed to do. So the timing thing, if they got wind of that this was going to take place, they would probably want to be up and running to see what we could, you know, it's basically intel.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically eavesdropping on something that we would wish we could have but don't have, but if we can analyze it, maybe we can back engineer it so someday we can have it, that kind of thinking.
Well, the second possibility I thought of, and that makes a lot of sense, what you just mentioned. But what about this one as a possibility? It's the off-worlders who knew that this facility, this HARP facility, was going to be working and decided to do this at that time in that location to maybe say, you think you got power? Let me show you something.
You know, that's possible. The problem, Kevin, is that we can scenario play forever, and we have too little data to actually pin down who was responsible. All I was able to do in the paper is to lay out the facts as we know them, the potential list of players, the ways this technology can be used to create what we saw, and then I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, that if somebody out there knows something, based on what we publish, they will quietly get in touch with us and give us further information. So far, nothing like that. Well, I can't really say that. Something at the conference occurred that was so mind-blowing that I really haven't decided where to place the information, and I'm not someone that goes around willy-nilly talking about sources and information that can't be verified by a second or third source.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of at a quandary as to whether I should even bring it up tonight. As our conversation progresses, let me see if there is a responsible way to do that without totally blowing our own credibility, which we worked pretty hard to maintain over the years in terms of our scientific approach to these things.
Well, that's fair enough. Okay, let's talk about the aftermath of this. What, if anything, have been the ramifications? Because I would think that provided all of this went down as your analysis seems to show that it went down, or I should say as your analysis shows that it seems to have gone down, it looks like it went down that way, there would have to be ramifications.
Well, the reason we can legitimately now raise the idea of, you know, guys from outer space potentially being involved.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we at Enterprise do not do UFOs.
Uh-huh.
I decided years ago politically, because the ufology community is such a bottomless pit of name-calling, backbiting, disinformation, you name it, that there's no way that anyone is ever going to make progress in solving these problems if you stay strictly within the conventional UFO field. So I've tried to maintain the scientific platform,
mm-hmm.
look at data as opposed to innuendo, people whispering, sources claiming to have inside info, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to stick with the numbers. But part of the numbers of this story, as you know, Kevin, is that same night, remember, the Norway spiral and whatever went down with that Russian missile occurred pre-dawn on the morning of December 9th, right?
Mm-hmm.
That same night, two Muscovites, two folks in Moscow, who were basically apparently riding around in a small car near Red Square and had a video camera with them, recorded and then loaded onto the Russian equivalent of YouTube, and then on YouTube itself, a video which was absolutely jaw-dropping in its own right.
Yeah, you're talking about the pyramid-shaped craft?
This huge floating tetrahedron hovering apparently on anti-gravity fields of some kind over Red Square almost within hours of the Norway spiral phenomena appearing 1,000 miles away to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through very carefully in our analysis my reasons for saying that even if it was faked, totally a video fake in Photoshop, if you want to, you know, use that term, it doesn't matter. Because the only way you can get something on the Russian equivalent of YouTube is if you're the Russian government. Or, a day later, it was picked up on Russian television, and the broadcasters, the anchors, the correspondents, ran the story like stories run on CNN over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
They ran this video and this story of these two Russian amateurs riding around photographing this awe-inspiring phenomena over Red Square the night of December 9th, within hours of the Norway spiral, which appeared earlier that day. And I put the two together, and I laid out very carefully why the two phenomena appear to be intimately, specifically, and most important, politically connected to an absolutely mind-boggling scenario. Because whoever floated this over the Kremlin, if it was real, was obviously using their power, their abilities, in another show of force over the Kremlin, over the heart of the most guarded airspace on the planet. And we know that because a couple, 3 days later, a Russian general made a specific point in the Russian media to claim that the Moscow airspace was the most protected, which, of course, I view as a signal that, A, the tetrahedron was real, and, B, this general was trying to tell his folks, there's nothing to worry about, everything's under control, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which, of course, is what authorities do when they're completely out of control.
Yeah, when they're terrified.
When they're very, very fearful.
Yeah.
All of this, of course, shall we say, lending itself to the idea, the scenario, a term we're going to use a lot tonight, I guess, that somebody is making a major statement. And then, of course, my question was, if normal Muscovites could not look up and see this in the sky over Moscow, which apparently they couldn't, only was photographed by a certain few.
Richard, I hate to do it. The music's taking over. We'll pick up right there on the other side of the break. Don't go away, folks. It gets even more interesting. Are back. My guest is Richard Hoagland, and Richard, I apologize, but we got interrupted by the break. I want to give you the floor and let you finish what you were saying.
Well, I was saying that the appearance simultaneously of these two off-scale phenomena, to me, is critical. You know, remember what Nuri keeps saying, he doesn't believe in coincidence?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to put these two things down as coincidental. And when you've got a tetrahedron-shaped spacecraft roughly the size of a football field, you know, 300 or so feet across, just floating lazily over the center of the most guarded airspace on the planet for an entire day, because shortly after the nighttime video of this appeared, a daytime version of this tetrahedron video appeared that also made it to RU, which is the Russian version of YouTube, and then YouTube itself, and was also picked up on Russian television. And then later, over the next couple of 3 weeks, it was picked up by the London Telegraph, which is one of the tabloids published out of London. And it even made it to Fox, and I think CNN and MSNBC and some other American networks very briefly. But of course, they all dismissed it as a hoax, and they dismissed the Norway spiral as a failed Russian missile test, you know, go away, nothing to see here, move along. Whereas, of course, as you know, if you read the article, there's a lot to be intrigued with and potentially even concerned with here, because something major is going down. As I have been saying for months and months and months now, we are building towards something. And it appears that this event on the 9th, this double event, was a trigger. The day before the president was to accept his Nobel Peace Prize, of a change of state of something on this planet, and it appears to be that we're supposed to look to the heavens for the next set of events.
Speaking of looking to the heavens, there has been a decision here in the USA that we're basically out of the astronaut business.
Well, yes and no. I spent a lot of time at the LA conference explaining that this is probably Barack Obama playing four-dimensional chess. And you have not seen the last of this at all, and it's ultimately going to come out exactly the way all of us want it, in keeping with the tape recording you ran of President Kennedy. But to get from here to there these days, remember, the president can propose, and the Republicans in Congress can basically say no. So what I think is really going on is this is a very, very elegant political strategy to get the Republicans to basically take the lead so they ultimately can't say no. And we could spend an entire program just limbing out that strategy, which has been forced upon us now because of the so-called 60-senator filibuster rule, which has brought, you know, representational government in Washington to an absolute standstill. Nothing can happen anymore unless you have a supermajority of 60 votes. So I think this is an Obama strategy ultimately around that, so that when we ultimately all decide on the kind of NASA and the kind of future missions that we want, the Republicans will have to be on board.
Well, I like what Kennedy said. You know, Kennedy said, and in that clip that I played, space exploration will go on with us or without us. And, you know, and that certainly is more true today than it was when he said it, because anybody that can build a rocket and light a fire in its tail is in the space game now. And so space exploration will continue whether we lead or not, and I certainly hope we lead.
There's an awful lot of nations which are developing human spaceflight programs. There, of course, is Russia, which has not, you know, abrogated its activities in space at all.
Mm-hmm.
There is China, which has now demonstrated with several missions, you know, manned missions, that they are fully capable of, you know, going to the moon and beyond. There is India, which has announced plans for manned missions in the next 10 years and has allied itself with a specific agreement to be part of the Russian cosmonaut program, as well as launching its own human spaceflight program. There is Japan. There are the Europeans, the European Space Agency, which is discussing now a manned spaceflight program. So for a president of the United States to basically call an end to human spaceflight is simply not credible. It makes no sense in many different directions until you start looking at the politics of how we get from here to there. Let me give you an example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other day, several senators, including a handful of Republicans, proposed and voted positively for the establishment of a financial commission to look at Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, entitlement programs as a way of ultimately attacking the debt, attacking balance of you know, payments, as a way of looking at the out years so that we rein in these huge budgets so that we can actually afford to do the things that we need to do. And as soon as the president said, this is a good idea, seven of those Republicans quit.
I laughed when that happened. I thought
they absolutely voted no. It was anything Obama would say yes to, they automatically, the self-declared party of no, said no.
Well, you know, what was really interesting is that these guys were co-sponsors of that bill.
They were co-sponsors.
And then voted against it, yeah.
And they voted against it. Now, that obviously is pure, pure politics. Nothing but politics.
So do you think
the president is doing is he's being very, very clever when it comes to space. Because the only area in Congress now, Kevin, that we have even a semblance of bipartisanship, where Republicans and Democrats look at the future of the country and they actually, you know, they give a little, they get a little, they come up with a central position, and then they vote appropriations based on the science, based on the good of the nation in terms of NASA. The only place where we have bipartisanship are on the space committees. So what he has done, and this is really brilliant four-dimensional chess, he's thrown down the gauntlet to people like Richard Shelby, who is a key critical Republican senator from Alabama. He's the senator the other day, by the way, that put a hold on 80-some appointments before they could act on any of the appointments in terms of congressional approval. Remember, the president can put forward, you know, people for, you know, government position, but in many of these cases, the Senate has to approve them. It's called the advise and consent clause.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Shelby put a hold on 80 applicants that the president and the administration had put forward and would not let one of them come up for a vote until a contractor in his district got a very lucrative Air Force contract to build the next generation aircraft refueling tanker, which, by the way, is not even American. It's supposed to be built by Airbus. That's the plant in his district. It's not a Boeing plant. It's not a Lockheed plant. It's an Airbus plant. So these jobs would basically go to a foreign contractor if Shelby got his way. That's the impasse we have reached where government is really broken. So what I think Obama has done in terms of the future of NASA is he has given them half the program, and he has basically created a context where the Republicans have to pony up the other half, which is the technology to go back to the moon and on to Mars, and it will be them on the record saying no to the future of NASA and the future of humankind if, in fact, they are so intemperate politically, and, of course, they're going to cave. They're going to ultimately come to the table. There will be an agreement, if I'm right, as I said in Los Angeles, whereby we have a viable, vigorous manned spaceflight program, which will include rockets and other technology to go to the moon, go back to Mars, or go on to Mars, and it will be a bipartisan effort, which then, of course, that can be used as a template for other critical things that the Republicans and Democrats have to get together on if we're going to have a government that is representing all of the rest of us.
Well, you know, this sort of thing has happened once before in fairly recent history, and that was with the Hubble Space Telescope program. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks.
Gene Simmons would want to be if he could be a talk host. Here's Kevin.
Welcome back. If you're just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. My guest this evening is Richard Hoagland. Richard, let me ask you a question now about... You know, we both have been kind of talking about where the space program is going. But let me ask you something. I don't understand. We went to the moon and several missions to the moon and then suddenly quit and that's it. And for decades now, we've been hanging around out there in low Earth orbit. What's the deal with that? What's NASA been up to?
Well, many times I've said it's obvious that when we went to the moon, we went there to find certain things. If you've read my book, Dark Mission, if you read the revised edition, which came out a few months ago.
I have to confess, I have not read the revised edition. I read the original.
Okay, well, the thesis in the original is expanded in the revised edition, which has something like 60 new pages and a lot of new photographs showing astonishing artifacts. NASA secretly discovered ancient intelligent artifacts all over the moon, and we basically came home because somebody didn't want us to use that to inspire and advance society here on Earth. It's very, very, very clear. I am beginning to think that maybe these demonstrations of force over Norway and over Moscow and God knows where else, are basically a warning to the guys here on Earth that we are basically quarantined, that we should not go beyond Earth orbit. That's one other additional potential scenario. I know this gets confusing for folks because there's too many players, there's too many possible futures, there's too many possible decisions, and you can't tell any of this without a scorecard, and nobody is giving us a scorecard. We're doing this from the outside, and even if we have sources that pop up, as I said earlier, did so during our experiences at the LA conference, you can't trust them. You don't know whether they're telling you real stuff or false information or trying to lead you in the wrong direction. I mean, this is a very turgid game.
Yeah, and there is another thing. Real stuff, disinformation, or somebody that needs pills. Because I run into that too.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would like, we'll continue talking, but I would like to invite our audience to join us. And in the second hour, that's our custom to do so. So let me get the telephone numbers up on your screen for those of you watching our TV channel. And for those of you who are listening by computer, by AM radio, FM radio, shortwave, cell phones, TiVo, or however else you're listening, the main number here at the studio is 623-444-5889. It will work from anywhere on this planet and possibly Planet X as well. The toll-free number works in the United States and Canada. It is 888-223-4599. If you do not live in the USA and you do not live in Canada, and you don't want to make the international long-distance call, you can go to my website and scroll down, and right under the picture of Richard Hoagland, you will see a link that says Flash Message, and you can send me a flash message. But you must be outside the USA and outside of Canada. If you're inside, we have telephones. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How are we doing?
Good.
Mr. Hoagland, I find that pretty interesting, you know, that you wanted to stay out of the UFO kind of end of the science on stuff. I mean, we got to look in our own backyard first before we can point the finger somewhere else. And I know that the Russians took Tesla's abilities more seriously sooner than we did. And they're supposed to be, you know, we're ahead of us, you know, and we're playing catch-up in, like, all these HARP facilities and stuff going on. And with the president going over there, you know, being right there at that time, the United States has been kind of brushing Russia off like, you know, they don't count anymore. I don't think they appreciate it, and they're showing us that because we wanted to put that missiles in Georgia, that they can stop missiles, and it was a demonstration from Russia to us
Terry, normally I would say that you might be onto something, except for a couple of rude things called facts. The Bulova Russian missile system, which they were testing that morning, is part of an entirely new strategic rocket system that Putin has been trying to get operational for the last couple of years. It's supposed to be an upgrade to the entire Russian, strategic rocket forces, and it seems unlikely, given how much money and how much was dependent on that rocket being successful, that they would have used their own rocket as a way of demonstrating a technology that makes those rockets obsolete. In other words, if you have access to that technology, you don't need rockets. It's kind of like that line out of Back to the Future. You know, remember where Dr. Brown, the kid says, what about roads? And Dr. Brown says, where we're going, we don't need roads. Well, with this kind of technology, you don't need ICBMs. You don't need sub-launch missiles. You don't need any of the conventional weaponry that we've understood and experienced and been familiar with during the Cold War. This represents such a stunning, striking breakthrough that it literally is game over. Whoever has access to this technology and can use it can basically call the shots and make anything they want to have happen on this planet happen, and no one will be able to, you know, stand against them unless they have equivalent technology. A more likely scenario is we're dealing with a third party. Now, you touched on something very interesting, somebody who's been looking into and is developing Tesla technology, and I totally agree with you there that that's in essence what we're seeing. Torsion field physics, or scalar technology to use Tom Bearden's term, or Tesla technology to use your term, it's all the same thing. It's a way of manipulating the universe according to the way the universe is really working, with a technology which can be used, as all technologies, for either benefit or as weapons. And the question then is, whose hands is it in? This is where I want to bring up the work of Dr. Joseph Farrell. And I'm sure, Kevin, that you know where I'm going with this.
Yes, I do.
Dr. Farrell and I have been consulting with each other for, you know, a couple, 3 years now, and I've been following his research in unveiling what the Nazis were up to at the end of World War II and the stunning developments and breakthroughs they had in this technology, this specific physics and technology, which then went somewhere at the end of the war. When you look at the open record, it didn't come here. It didn't go to the Soviet Union. It went somewhere else. And it is his theory and my theory that basically there is a, how should I say, a descendant international institution, what Joseph calls the Nazi International, which has been quietly pursuing the development of this physics and technology in some area of the planet and perhaps off the planet, given that this technology gives you access to real spaceflight, and that it may be that it was these, you know, second, third generation Nazis who were showing their muscles on the morning of December 9th to both the United States and to China and to Russia, because, by the way, a big tetrahedron, Kevin, also appeared the same day over China.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Nazi International. It was them basically saying, look, you guys, we'll let you play around in low Earth orbit. We'll let you have your fun and games, but you're not going out into the solar system, which is our solar system. We own it. We control it. You stay there. We'll stay here. And it could be that this was an ultimatum demonstrating to the powers of the planet that we fund with our tax dollars that there is, in fact, a glass ceiling, and we are confined to here, which would then make Alex Jones' website absolutely correct. It would turn this into a prison planet, would it not, if that was the scenario, which ultimately turns out to be true?
Oh, it would indeed. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Yeah.
Hello, Richard. Always an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. By the way, I got your book for my father for Christmas this past Christmas, and I also read, I've read the original, I haven't read the updated version yet. My father's got that one. But I will definitely be reading it when I can. I got 2 points I want to make here. First of all, I think I've also read Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods, and I strongly suggest that that technology that's up there on the moon and everywhere else on in the solar system, all these ancient ruins, may in fact perhaps be ours.
And in that, you would probably be correct. I have made the same statements in the Dark Mission. Mm-hmm. I even began looking in this direction when I wrote The Monuments of Mars, which is in its fifth edition. So, no, this is not an untoward idea at all. In fact, it's probably the most likely idea. And it feeds into my answer to the previous caller, Terry, because if we're dealing with Nazis showing off their toys, the Nazis believed absolutely they were the only rightful heirs apparent to these ancient civilizations or ancient civilization that once occupied the rest of the solar system. So if that is true, then there is a kind of a logical connection between what they might be doing now and what was done thousands, tens of thousands of years ago. In essence, they're saying to us, if this was a demonstration of their power and their ability to keep us on this planet, look, you guys don't have the right bloodlines. We are the rightful heirs to what's out here. You are not. You stay there. We will keep you contained. And that is the glass ceiling, unfortunately, to which we may be confined.
Well, and Richard, I agree with you there. And the second point I wanted to bring up is apparently Alfred Weber has apparently come up with a whistleblower report from Laura Eisenhower, the great-granddaughter of
Bill Lake. Yeah, it's all fake. It's totally, totally, totally fake.
Totally
absolutely
fake.
100% fake.
The Mars Colony Project.
Hmm?
The Mars Colony Project is fake.
No. The whole thing, everything that he's reporting, she said, she hasn't said, it's a complete fake. It's more disinformation as the you-know-what is hitting the rotating receptacle.
Okay, I'll take the. I'll make sure to make a mental note of that.
Okay.
One of the
problem, Kevin, is as we get down here to the, you know, the end times, where it does, you know, rubber does meet the road and other things hit rotating objects, you got to be very careful who's going to put up what on the wall to try to disinform and mislead people. We're going to see more and more and more of that. Now, look, when back in November when Robin and I, you know, went to the Secrets Conference, which is hosted every year by Dr. Chet Snow, I laid out in two presentations there an important backdrop, which brings into this series of discussions the work of Joseph Farrell, my own work, and several other investigators. And it's now available on DVD, so I can be so crass as to give a commercial. If people want to see how all of this is connected, the genesis of NASA, John Kennedy and why he was really murdered, what Obama and this administration may know and be trying to do in spite of these impediments, it's all part of the Secrets Conference presentation I did back in November before the first things began to really raise their head and cause interesting phenomenology in the skies.
Where can people get that, Richard?
Say again?
Where can people get that information from the conference that you did?
Okay, if you go to the Enterprise Mission website, enterprisemission.com, scroll down, there is a big banner called Secrets, the Startling New NASA Kennedy-Obama Connection to 2012, because this, in fact, is also connected to that interesting hypothesis that we're coming up to a critical date. Included in the presentation is new information that I discovered myself as to who killed John Kennedy, and perhaps more important, why, which comes from the U.S. government itself, as you will see. If you don't have a computer, if you're not on the web, there's even a phone number that I can give you so people can order it directly, which is 1-877-345-6222. That's 1-877-345-6222. Now, in order to understand what's going on now and what is going to happen if we're right in the coming weeks and months, because we're measuring now events in weeks and months and not years, the rate of change, the rate at which things are hitting the fan is accelerating, and I will support that statement in a moment. But you've got to have the background to understand where we're going next, because all of these separate political developments, including the apparent gutting of the human spaceflight program under NASA, it's all part of a larger puzzle. It's all part of a larger political equation. It's all part of a human response to something from outside, which is basically saying, you ain't going any further. And it's going to demand a lot of people understanding the background to know what to do next. So I would recommend strongly that you get that DVD where I lay out for 2 hours and 20 minutes the backdrop to what we're currently seeing, including the reason for the formation of NASA itself, which I have finally, to my own gratitude, have figured out, as you will see when you see the DVD.
Outstanding. Okay, let's go to the phone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Elias from Portland, Maine.
Hello, Elias.
Hi there.
Hi there. I have a quick question for Richard and then a longer one, which I could take off air. Would that be all right, Kevin?
Well, you got 3 minutes. The phone system has a timer on it, so.
Okay, great. The quick question I got is if there have been any further developments or any words that we've heard from NASA or anyone else concerning Iapetus.
Funny you should ask. Iapetus was flown by with a very close Cassini mission flyby a couple of years ago. I have intended to complete part 7 of that series when I got a critical mass of data where I can actually support some pretty extraordinary things that I'm going to say. I have only needed peace and quiet to sit down and put it together. I plan to do that in the next couple of months. So look for on Enterprise part 7, and anything on Enterprise, as you know, is for free. So look for part 7 of the Iapetus series, which will tie additional dots together in a nice big red bow, and I think you will be absolutely intrigued to see where that story has taken us.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait. And then my other question, and I'll take my answer off the air to let somebody else get on, if by some miracle you got the phone call that said, all right, Mr. Hoagland, we're putting you in charge of NASA. It's up to you to get us back on track. How would you restructure NASA, and who would you put in charge of, like, various departments within NASA to really get us going? And that's my big question, and I'll take it off the air, and thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call.
Boy, that's a really good question. I'll tell you what I would do, and this is going to shock a lot of people. I would abolish NASA, okay?
You said that on this show once before, and you shocked me when you said it.
I would abolish NASA because, remember, NASA was set up ostensibly as a civilian agency, which we now know is not true. It's an arm of the Defense Department of the DOD, and I could give you some specific quotations that would, support that. I refer you again to Dark Mission, where we actually quote from the NASA Charter, and you can see that nothing in law that NASA finds can it put out in public without the permission of the security agencies, the intelligence community, and the president and the National Security Council under the 1947 National Security Act, which means it is not a civilian agency. You only get to see through NASA what it is authorized under the DOD to release to the world and to the public. So I would get rid of NASA as an institution tomorrow. I would replace NASA with something that I have been recommending for, the last 10, 20 years. I would make NASA, what it does, what its mission is, a cabinet-level position. I would create something I call the Department of the Exterior, like the Department of the Interior, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put everything under the Department of the Exterior that is basically involving the Earth as a planet, the solar system, both in terms of the scientific disciplines, you know, figuring out how planets work so we can keep the one we've got, figuring out how to utilize the resources of the solar system so we can radically transform and make ourselves a lot richer as a world economy, which is what desperately needs to be done, and as an agency, as an institution, as a cabinet-level institution which could pursue the knowledge of those ancient ruins, which should really go for the benefit of all mankind and not just for a few Nazis who think they're related by bloodlines to the guys who left all that stuff out there, which we're not supposed to know about. And the only way to get the political leverage to do all this is to put it not as a cabinet, as an agency, but as a cabinet level equal participant at the highest levels of the U.S. government, because what is in the solar system will either save us or destroy us, and we must use it to save ourselves.
Well said. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Brian from Burnaby, and it's a real pleasure to talk to you, Richard. I was just wondering, a few years ago you seemed to be very enthusiastic about returning to the moon, that the civilizations that have put artifacts there were sort of waiting for us here on Earth to develop the technology to go there, and that they were actually welcoming us back to the moon. And I think you may have changed your position on that a little bit, and I was just wondering if you have an explanation of what changed.
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, I could barely hear him too, but here's what I got from it. I'll try to get it correct. But let me say to both of you, we're headed into a break in about a minute, so we may have to get the answer on the other side of the break. He said a few years ago, it seems that your position was that you were enthusiastic about let's return to the moon, let's explore all of those ruins and artifacts and whatever's there. And it seems that you may now have changed your position on that.
Not at all. Not one iota. I really fundamentally believe that if we can get back to the moon and get what's there in public so that everyone understands what the stakes are, it will be the game changer which changes everything, both economically, politically, spiritually.
Okay. The break is taking over. We have to step away for a few minutes. We'll be back. We'll pick up right there when we come back, and we'll take your calls. Welcome back. My guest is Richard Hoagland. And again, we had to interrupt you right in the middle of a sentence. I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Well, if you'll remind me where my thought was, I will.
Well, you were answering the question of whether you had changed your position about going back to the moon, and you were saying, no, we ought to go back, and it ought to be made public when we find whatever we find there.
Well, I don't know where that caller got the idea of changing my position, because categorically, unequivocally, I have not. Absolutely, 100%, I have not. What I'm trying to do is explain why the president appears to be willing to give up the option. And what I'm come to the conclusion is that it's probably one of two reasons. Either it is a four-dimensional chess game with the Republicans, who, if he had advocated in his budget, you know, increasing NASA's monies, which he has, and in going back to the moon, they would automatically say no, and it would, you know, they could basically hold up the entire process because of the filibuster, in which case then you would get collywobbly Democrats in the so-called middle or wherever they are that would also agree with them on this, because there are a lot of Democrats who believe that money spent on NASA is basically money thrown down a rat hole, who do not understand at all the concept of investment in the future, which John Kennedy did, which is why we have the 21st century and all the bells and whistles and extraordinary tools to enhance our economy that we do now in the form of solid-state electronics and, you know, the Internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's only because of investment in those NASA technologies 40, 50 years ago that we have the benefits of our economy that we have now because of those technologies. So this is a very complicated political game. The other scenario, which is much more disturbing, is that, in fact, he is acquiescing in the short term to outside threats, that someone with this torsion field physics and technology was making a very pointed case by both the spiral and the object that was placed over the Kremlin hovering there with absolute, you know, impotence to any attack or any assault, that we have this power and you don't, and you will do what we say. And one of the things we say is you stay there and we will control here, and you will not be allowed to go back to the moon or on to Mars. That is a serious, real consideration we have to look at and examine carefully. I am hoping that is not the case, because unless we have something up our sleeves, unless the black ops crowd here on Earth have in fact developed these weapons and this technology in secret, and the president, with an appropriate appeal to them, can actually gain access, which is stunning to actually even be able to say in a coherent breath, then we are at the mercy of whoever is doing this and whoever is giving this ultimatum, and we may in fact have to stay here, in which case it will be a very sorry state of affairs indeed.
All right. Back to the telephone and caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin. How are you?
Good.
That's good. Mr. Hoagland, great to hear you on the show. I follow your work diligently, so it's nice to hear you in person. My question to you is, I know you're a man of science, so it might be pure speculation on your part, but do you think that this is going to be pushed into a war with whoever is... I'm opting for off-world intelligences, but do you think that a war is coming with whoever is coming? I mean, that's pretty bold.
Can you please repeat that? I can barely hear you.
He wants to know, do you think that this is pushing towards a war between us and whoever it is that has this technology?
Well, I would hope not. I think, again, we're in this speculating scenario playing tonight. If the events over Norway and over Moscow were a show of force, you basically, in a show of force, are trying to get your opponent to cave without a war. Remember, Kevin, that there were discussions back during the end of World War II of bringing Japanese observers to some deserted island in the Pacific and showing them the power of the atomic bomb so they would capitulate without having to use this awful weapon on an actual target? Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, you can look at this in that way, that if in fact this was a third party, and the third party is irrelevant at the moment who they are, but if the third party was demonstrating that they have a technology which can bring the most advanced weapon system the Russians are capable of fielding to a dead stop from 12,000 miles per hour and make it twirl in circles in the sky and uselessly expend its fuel in a brute demonstration of force, then you don't do that idly. You do it to send a message, and the message obviously would be, we can do this, you can't touch us, therefore you'd really be dumb to try to contravene any ultimatums we are giving you behind the scenes. And one of those ultimatums, or maybe the key ultimatum, may be, you stay on Earth, we'll let you have low Earth orbit, you know, going around and around and around and going nowhere. You ain't going anywhere out here because we control it and you don't, and you either take that message to heart or we will up the ante. We will do something much, much, much more dramatic. If that is what, in fact, has occurred, and I'm not saying it has, I'm saying it's one of the possible scenarios, then there won't be a war, because how can you have a war, you know, against force of that nature? It kind of brings me to mind of the old, you know, you don't, you know, tug on Superman's cape.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot match unless we have an arsenal of black weapons based on the same physics and technology, which we have not rolled out in public, unless we ourselves on Earth, as part of the, you know, military-industrial complex that Dwight Eisenhower was warning us against, unless we have access through some channels to those weapons here on Earth, if somebody from off the Earth, either descendants of Nazis or a real ET presence, is giving us this ultimatum, no, there won't be war, because we don't have a hope and a prayer of prevailing in such a war. So ultimately, no, there will not be war unless we have weapons of this ourselves.
All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming, Kevin.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Kevin. Richard, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Let us suppose that James Horak is correct.
James who?
And that there are celestial beings that even the ETs...
No, I missed who you were referring to.
James Horak, H-O-R-A-K.
I'm not familiar with the name.
He would not be familiar with him because James is not out there in public. He's just been on the show.
So you'll have to ask Kevin about him. But according to him, there is a race of celestial beings that even the ETs stand in awe of. And according to him, this current experiment on the planet Earth has failed. And what would be the possibility of, by sending using this spiral to stop a missile in its tracks, they're sending the message that we do not want you to contaminate the universe with your nuclear weapons?
Well, I think that's what I just said, that somebody out there is telling us we're only going to let you go to low Earth orbit and no further. That's one of the scenarios. I just don't know who.
No. The experiment has failed.
In other words, we are on the verge of extinction. Why would you say the experiment has failed?
Because the power structure is corrupt.
Yeah, but it's always been corrupt. You know, it's not like we live in a different age. If you look back at history, power has always been corrupt. Absolute power has always been corrupt, absolutely, and yet we have prevailed. We created this experiment on Earth called the United States of America, which is, as far as I know, and I'm a pretty good historian, is the only governmental system that humans have created which has within it the power of renewal, that you can have a revolution from within the system as opposed to destroying the system and starting over. So I would not say at all that the system has failed. I would say we are a system in transition and that there are lots and lots of other possible scenarios than saying categorically it's over, time's up, you have not passed the test. I mean, look, there are more people tonight who are being fed, who are being clothed, who are being housed. There are more human beings taking care of other human beings. There is more humanitarian aid. Look at what happened in Haiti, the worldwide response in Haiti. There's more civil liberties around the planet than ever before. I mean, to my way of thinking, the system has not failed. It is a work in progress. It certainly isn't where I want it to be or where you want it to be, but to say it has failed is to give up just on the eve of maybe one of its most important successes, which is we are all learning how to live with each other without killing each other.
That's just it. You're looking at the smaller scale. I'm looking at
the whole planet.
Okay. Unfortunately, the timer has timed out. But, you know, where he's coming from, I think, the background on that is that with all of our nuclear weapons and our penchant for war and so forth, that's where this idea comes from, that we're a failed species. I think that's the background of what he's saying. But the flip side of that is, as you say, the humanitarian work, look, I think you would agree with this.
Kevin, I can show progress in every single area.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of progress is happening because good-hearted men and women all over the world are not satisfied with the status quo. They're not satisfied that what we've got is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are forces of darkness. Yes, there are forces of greed. Yes, there are forces of evil. And there are a lot of good-hearted men and women, millions and billions of them, who are striving every day to make life better both for their families, for their neighbors, and people they don't even know. I am not about to write the human race off at all, and anyone who does, frankly, I don't think deserves to be part of the human species because they have consigned all the rest of us who don't agree to the dust heap of history long before its time.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's not the warrior that starts a war. It's his commander-in-chief. All wars down through history Ultimately, it's a king or a president or a prime minister that says it's on. And then the warriors have to go fight it. But there's more people on the planet who are not involved in the war machinery than there are people that are involved. And there are more people involved in doing good things for life than there are people that are involved in negative things. And, you know, if numbers mean anything, the good side has to win eventually.
And maybe, just maybe, Kevin, and this is another scenario, somebody has shown up to give the good guys a little help.
Ooh, now that's interesting. Buys us a little bit of time. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, British Columbia.
Haya, are you willing to hang on through the break? Because it just took over.
Sure, I'll hang on.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. We are back. We are also on Final Approach. My guest is Richard Hoagland, and online with us, Haya from Canada. Are you still with us, Haya?
Hi, Richard. It's Haya.
Hi there.
Hi. Listen, I wanted to say something that when this spiral happened in Norway, I got very, very, very curious, and I started collecting as many little videos as I possibly could. Within one of the videos, it shows the spiral spinning, and it's white, stark white inside, like a brilliant white inside, and you see, of course, you see all the colors, and then all of a sudden, shooting out from the spiral, there's another spiral spinning as well.
Is that the blue corkscrew beam?
Well, no, it wasn't blue. It was an actual second spiral coming out of it.
Okay. Yeah, there was a point of transition, and I've looked at the videos, and it appears as if at that point this torsion field, as I have been discussing it, took over and imprinted this extraordinary, what we call a Kaladny pattern, on the gases making up the initial spiral.
So there was actually two spirals happening.
Yes. Well, there were two effects. The first was the mechanical spinning, which was dumping the fuel from the Russian rocket, and then this torsion force took over and imprinted
this wasn't the Russian rocket at all. This was the actual spinning spiral that everybody saw with the blue light.
Right.
Okay. Well, when it was spinning, it was white at first, and it spun and spun and spun, and you know how it got very dark, like a great big huge black ball in it?
Mm-hmm. At the very end when it stopped, it
looked
like a black
hole.
Okay,
well, the very end, with one of the footage I have, it's actual live footage, you see coming shooting out from the center of this, it comes shooting out very quickly, and it's spinning as well.
Have you seen a brand new spiral happening again? Have you seen the Enterprise paper that I did on this?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Okay, I would go to enterprisemission.com, and I would read all three parts, and then there are videos there connected at various stages. So I would refer to our analysis to these various stages.
Okay, did you also get the picture that was taken, another spiral that happened over in Norway on the 27th of January?
No, I did not see that. I saw an
aurora. It was an aurora flare, and it was aurora green flare right over the same spot.
Right.
I recognized all the houses and everything. It was the same spot, except this time it was like it looks like a spin top with two points going through the center of it.
Yeah, it's
and
a
it's
very
also
small
green.
Feature of the aurora, and I don't know what that is and whether it was connected, but it obviously was not of the same nature as the spiral on December 9th.
Slightly different.
It was very different.
Yeah, I have pictures of that.
I don't know whether they're connected.
Hiya, I want to thank you for your call. Our system is disconnecting. Let me explain this very quickly for those of you who are new. Because we are only on for 2 hours, I have a timer on the phone system so that we can get as many of your calls in as possible. Okay, so we're not being rude to anybody. We're trying to get as many calls in as we can in the limited time that we have. I have a flash message here from Australia. This has come from Blue in Australia. He has two questions. The first one you already talked about, a conflict between the pro-Nazi space programs and the rest of the world. But the second question says, what's your take on the so-called Gulf of Aden Stargate and Professor Farrell's theory on the Nazi secret development of secret science program?
Well, I'm not familiar with the Gulf of Aden Stargate. People throw that term around a lot these days.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it bothers me because I don't think they know what they're talking about. Part of the campaign to get people to not take these technologies and the implications of the political forces behind them seriously is to throw so much stuff up on the wall that no one knows where the truth lies.
Mm-hmm.
And what I try to do and what Dr. Farrell tries to do and several other researchers is we try to stick to the science, to the numbers, to the things we can prove. I've kind of ventured out on a very long limb tonight, Kevin, in that I have, you know, entertained several speculative scenarios where, in fact, all we really know is that something that should not have been possible reached out, stopped this Russian missile, and we don't know who is behind it. We don't know the intent, the political objectives, the time frame. We don't know their next message. We don't know what their terms are. We don't know who they are. But all I can tell you with certainty is that I don't think this is going to be the last demonstration, because the folks here on Earth, particularly those with power, are very, 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 very stubborn, and I doubt if they will give in and acquiesce to whatever these demands are quietly. So we're going to see more evidence, and it will probably get even more spectacular before we understand what and who is going on.
Do you think that when this thing happened, do you think it kicked off any really high-level discussions about all of this?
Absolutely. And it came in the middle of a series of developments which I laid out at the conference in Los Angeles, which we're going to be putting together as a follow-on series of DVDs to the background that I strongly urge people to get hold of from the Secrets Conference in Tempe. And you can go to the Enterprise website and find out how to get the DVD there, on the connection between the formation of NASA, John Kennedy's death, Obama, and what is currently going on, incredibly timed. I don't think that all of that is accidental, in that we are planning, we meaning the power structure of this planet, to ultimately let people know what's going on. I mean, even the Vatican is beginning to make very positive noises about extraterrestrials. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I noticed for the past year or so.
What?
For the past year or so, they've been doing that.
They began about a year or so ago, but they came out a few months ago, like in January. I think it was January 25th, they actually held a conference,
mm-hmm,
at the Vatican Observatory there in Italy, discussing the implications of extraterrestrial life and what would happen if the human race were to encounter it. We're seeing, I believe, a drip, drip, drip preparation, and I don't think that it's accidental, again, that all these events are occurring almost simultaneously. We're moving at some direction at Warp 9, and I guarantee you this is not the last that we're going to be discussing this on the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, I certainly hope it's not the last. Very quickly, because we're almost out of time for the show, but let me ask you this. Are you on the positive or negative side in terms of whether there will be an official disclosure in the near term? And near term meaning within the next 4 or 5 years?
I would say it's going to be within the next 4 or 5 months, not years, and that you're going to be seeing data that's going to be put on the record that will be pretty unequivocal that we're not alone. The question is the exact timing I cannot give you, or who is going to be doing it. For instance, in the last 24 hours, the British apparently have declassified a whole bunch of new UFO files, and CNN picked up the story with a very positive spin, which I find another straw in the wind. I think we're moving somewhere toward disclosure at Warp 9, and the spiral appearances and other things around it may in fact be part of accelerating the process.
Outstanding. I hope you're right. Richard, I want to thank you for being with me. If you will, just stay on the phone with me for just a moment. I'd like to speak with you for a minute or two. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. That's a wrap for this week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.